You're listening to another great podcast in the MyMac Podcasting Network.
Hi, folks. Welcome to episode 116 of the Let's Talk Apple podcast. I'm your host, Bart Bouchotz, and this is the show for April 2023. I am joined today by a very special guest who I have, on the one hand, I'm sad to say haven't had on in a while. On the other hand, I'm delighted to say I have on now. Linda Goucher, welcome back.
Thank you, Bart. I'm happy to be here. I've been traveling and bouncing around doing various things, and it is a delight to be back here.
Excellent. And I presume you've been bouncing around with your Mac and all your good Apple gear with you.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's true.
Excellent. Well, we have a whole month's worth of Apple news to digest, so I suggest we get stuck in. How does that sound?
Sounds great.
Okay, so a little bit of feedback and follow-up on stuff we were talking about last time. So last month, I decided to pick as one of my main stories Apple in India, because it's always been a not main story and it felt like it should be a main story, but what month do you do it? And so we did it last month, and now this month it's big news again. So I guess we'll just update the conversation to say that finally, after how many years have Apple been working towards having a store in India? It's a while. It's been
long time, several years.
Yeah, because they weren't allowed to unless they manufactured X amount within the country, and then they got partners with Pegatron, and all of this was just to lead up to having their own stores. But now they have two. They opened two of them this month. And by all accounts, it seemed to go very well. And it was, well, Tim Cook went over, so it was full court press. There were big crowds, and as best as I could tell, there were a successful launch and there seemed to be a lot of good buzz. And I believe it got a mention in the earnings call as well, which we'll talk about in detail later. Yeah. In other news, while Tim Cook was over there in opening the two stores, he also popped in to visit the Prime Minister, which is how important India think Apple is and Apple think India is. And after he left, one of India's ministers said, oh, no, I'm pretty sure Apple are going to double their investment in the next 3 years. I would assume Tim Cook may have mentioned something to the Prime Minister, maybe. I don't know. And they've also taken out a 10-year lease on a bunch of new offices in Bengaluru. So they seem to be full steam ahead for India.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's going well, at least currently. There's been glitches along the way, as you've mentioned, but yeah, it's going better now.
I think the worst glitch might have been the riots in the factory for Pegatron.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely, that's a big deal. Apple does not like that kind of PR at all.
No. Oh, but like you say, they seem to be getting settled in. Another long-running story, well, not long, a story we touched on a few times is, oh, excuse the pun, I didn't even mean it. I think it was last summer, Apple announced that Tap to Pay to receive payments would be coming to the iPhone, but they said they would be rolling it out slowly with different partners, and it's been quite a slow rollout, but we had Square a few months ago, and we now have another pretty big name joining the picture. GoDaddy are rolling it out to their business customers. That again, is a substantial amount of people in the US who do, you know, little businesses, you know, sell vegetables in a farmer's market or stuff. It's so handy for them to just have their phone as a receiver of payment.
Yeah. That's going to be interesting. I've not seen that in the wild yet. But I do, you know, I expect to. So we'll see. I'll keep an eye out for it.
Yeah, because it seems to be very American focused at the moment. So I haven't seen it in the wild either, but that's because it's not here yet. So that seems like a good reason. But what I do see a lot is people with little Square contraptions stuck to their phones at farmers markets and stuff. And it'll be nice for them not to have to do that. But someone said to me a few days ago, so do you remember the last time you had cash? And I said, well, I know the last time I opened my wallet, it was to replace the battery in my AirTag. And I was surprised to find 20 euro in there. But other than that, I haven't opened it in years.
Yeah. There's a number of things I still do with cash, but it has to do with some substantial discounts with gasoline or petrol for our. What do you say in Ireland? Do you say petrol?
Oh, petrol.
Or do you
we're petrol heads.
Petrol. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So for petrol, I get quite a discount for those green pieces of paper. They're green here. Oh. So.
So. That's interesting. So is that because the service stations don't want to pay the credit card fees?
Yes. It's just this one brand, and it happens to be a convenient one for me. So many of them, I think, just only take, well, as far as I know, but I only go to this one place. So,
Yeah. Okay, so you're not quite cashless yet, but I think a lot of the world is very much heading that way.
Yeah, yeah. My husband is. He does, you know, he just does the cards, you know,
the Apple
Pay
Watch
or whatever.
I think the Apple Watch was the game changer for me because the watch is literally always on my arm. And at this stage, like, I get my coffee from a local place that's like literally a camper trailer with a big flap in the side that they open up outside the college gates every morning. And even they take touch to pay for my watch. So really, that just covers everything off. And like I say, the farmer's market, they have the little square devices. So no matter how, you know, it's not just the supermarkets, it's just everywhere now.
Yeah. Yeah. And I use the app, the watch, all the time, too. That is such a convenient thing. So,
pleasing.
No question.
So pleasing.
Yeah.
Now, moving us on to regulatory rundown. All in all, this section of the show isn't too long this time, but I think a lot of this is stick a pin in it. So Germany passed a new law recently where they were going to have extra special antitrust for extra important companies. So they had these like sort of legal tests for a company that's both big and important to the economy. And everyone sort of assumed they meant people like Apple. Well, it's official. They mean people like Apple. So they will be more tightly regulated. Exactly what that means, time shall tell. And in very similar news, the European Commission have released the 19 tech companies who will fall under the Digital Services Act, or the DSA, when it comes into effect later in the year. And shock and or horror, it includes Apple. Now, the DSA is largely about online moderation and stuff. So the DSA is the one that Apple don't care about. And we're very happy to say that we will be abiding by the DSA worldwide because they have to change nothing. The DMA, on the other hand, that will be much more interesting. And I think we may hear something at WWDC about third-party app stores because the DMA is going to require that when it comes into force in 2024, I think.
And I'm a little bit behind on that one, Bart, that the DMA has been firmly passed and all appeals have been exhausted. So that is happening.
That has been signed, sealed and delivered. That is like the implementation date is, I believe, November 2024.
Okay.
But it is on the statute. Uh-huh. It is basically, it is law, but it doesn't come into effect until the end of next year. But it is, it's ready, it's done, it's baked. It is.
And that, pardon me, that's the EU?
Yes.
It's not, it's the whole EU. Okay. All right. Yeah. Not just Germany or, okay.
So to be honest, actually, that's probably the most significant thing about the DMA. So we've had one law for Europe, which was the GDPR, but every country had to implement that law themselves. And it was based on where your headquarters were, which meant that the Irish enforcers of the GDPR were very, very, very powerful.
Right.
And very lax. And
okay.
Very unpopular with their opposite numbers all around Europe. And so now with the DMA, the very large companies are being taken away from the nation states and being centrally controlled by the European Commission in Brussels. And that's the big change. So no more give the Irish government a little bit of extra money and it'll all be fine. It's going to be properly centrally managed, one rule for everyone. And I mean, Ireland are losing out, but as biased as I am, our regulators, I believe the euphemism they used was light touch regulation. Right, we all know what that means.
Yeah. But Ireland has benefited tremendously from Apple. So, you know, this is how things work. Yeah.
And Intel and Hewlett-Packard and Oracle and Microsoft, and I'm forgetting so many of them. I live in what we call the Green Silicon Valley. And within spitting distance of me is a gigantic new Intel plant that's, I think, about a year away from opening. I mean, this thing is huge. It's taken them 2 or 3 years to build. And it's miles. Like, so I cycle along and it's like, it's next to me. And then I keep cycling and I keep cycling and I keep cycling and it's still next to me.
This is a fab?
Yeah.
I assume?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, it was a big deal for Ireland because they were coming to the end of the fab. We've had a fab here for ages, but that was coming to the end of its useful life. And the question was, would there be another major fab for Ireland? Would we get a modern process? And we did. And they've now been building for, I think it's 3 years they've been constructing this fab. And it's looking close to ready now. So,
okay.
Big deal.
Great.
It's a very big deal here. Yeah. And then one last thing. So, another thing Europe passed recently is the requirement for USB-C on mobile devices. And the rumor mill said that Apple were going to prevent USB-C from running at full speed unless you had an MFI certified cable. And the European Commission basically jumped the gun and said, if you do that, we will put an import ban on your device. When we said USB-C, we meant USB-C, not Apple blessed USB-C.
Okay, now, what was Apple's intent in requiring that cable? Is it especially good security-wise, or?
Well, the MFI program has always been an excellent source of revenue.
Okay.
And it was only a rumor. Okay. It was only a rumor that they were going to do something to make the MFI certified cables be better. And the commission just basically went, no, when we said standard USB-C, we meant the standard USB-C. So, I mean, it's probably a storm in a teacup, but I thought it was interesting that all it took was the rumor mill and it's like, poof, closed.
Okay.
Jumping on to legal latest, which is a section I usually hate, but it's very short this time. So, Apple versus Epic, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has upheld Apple's victory in the lower courts. Everyone expects it to be appealed higher up. Now, I might need your help here, but my understanding is after the Ninth Circuit Court, isn't it the Supreme Court next?
Yes. Yes, it is. Yes. What they can do is when they first go to any of the circuit courts of appeals, they typically get a 3-judge panel out of about 12 or 18 judges. I think that varies circuit to circuit.
Right.
So they typically get that 3-judge panel, and they can ask for an en banc, is what they call it.
Ooh.
When you ask for the whole, all 12 or 18 or whatever judges to hear the case. So there is that possibility. Sometimes the circuit court declines that request for en banc. It's ENBANC, two words.
Which is, I think, in French for on the bench. So I think it basically is the whole bench. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Thank you for the. Why it would be French and not Latin, but who knows? Anyway,
a lot of your legal words are French, because like, why do you have solicitors general? It's because in French, it's the other way around, right? So it's a solicitor general is a general solicitor. It's a solicitor with general responsibility. But like in French, you have the cordon bleu, the blue ribbon. The blue comes on the other side. So it's actually an attorney general is actually a general attorney, but said with a French accent. And, you know, and that's why when you pluralize it, they go backwards.
Yeah, I don't know how the French got in there. I thought we got most of our stuff from the Brits in terms of legal things, and half of it is in Latin. So who knows?
Yeah, I don't know where that came from. I think, wasn't there a bit of a love of Roman civilization? Wasn't the Roman Republic a bit of a hero worship for some of your founding fathers?
It actually was. You're correct. You are correct. It was. So maybe that's it. Maybe that's where it came from. Yeah. So
excellent. Okay.
Yeah.
Jefferson, either way,
Jefferson.
Either it's going en banc or it's going up to the Supreme Court, but it seems unlikely that Epic Games are going to just say, oh, that's fine. But both courts have the ability to say, no, we don't want to hear the case. So we shall see.
Right.
Another one that I don't quite know how it's going to play out then is Apple v. Masimo. So this is a company who claimed to own the blood oxygen monitoring technology Apple used in the Apple Watch, and they were looking for a full import ban on Apple Watches to the United States. And that has ended in a mistrial because the jury could not reach unanimity. And my understanding from listening to what macOS Ken had to say is that almost the entire jury were in Apple's favor, but one wasn't. So there's some question as to whether Masimo actually want a retrial, because if it was so heavily against them, is it worth all of that money?
Yeah, it may be a question of, you know, because theoretically they could go, oh, we need to change our legal strategy, our theory of the case, you know, to... So, I mean, but they have to have something that they think would be more effective.
Right. So, yes. Yeah. You don't often get a do-overs, you know. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And they would have to be willing to spend the money. I mean, that's the most significant part.
Yeah. I mean, it's big gains if you win, but yeah, you don't have infinity funds to go up against Apple's legal team.
Right. And Apple does.
Yeah. So, it's not actual infinity, but it's so close. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like, yeah.
May as well be, yeah. Okay, so jumping on to HR and acquisition news, to be honest, very, very little happened this month, which may, actually, I know why, but we'll talk about that later. But what we do know is that Apple have decided to free up a few of their lawyers. They have dropped their suit against Gerard Williams III, who was once an Apple engineer working on Apple Silicon, and then left to co-found a startup called Nuvia, who are a chip design company. And Apple felt that that was inappropriate, and he felt that he was entirely within his rights, and he seems to at least have most of a point, because Apple have dropped the case.
Yeah, yeah.
And as I understand it, California is quite hostile to these kind of non-competes and stuff. So I guess it wouldn't have been on the grounds of non-competes. They must have been claiming he was using Apple IP.
They would. Yeah, I'm not intimately familiar with this specific case. But yeah, they would have to have some grounds of that sort. And for some reason, there could have been a settlement behind the scenes. I mean, occasionally that happens and it's not made public. Yeah. So, and I'd have no inside information on that. I haven't seen anything in our local press that would clarify that. So who knows?
It's just the thing that happened. Yeah, it's kind of nice to have an end to that case. It always seemed a bit, I don't know, something about that case always sort of rubbed me up the wrong way. It sort of felt a bit mean.
Yeah, it really depends. I mean, without knowing what this specific person did, what they actually did, it's really hard to, you know, it's two sides of a dispute. So
he said, she said, and it's really awkward as a podcaster to have something to say in it. So I'm just happy it's over. Problem solved.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Right, I'm going to move us on then to Apple services and original content. And this is just the highlights, and I've tried to spread them out across all of Apple services to give us a taste of everything. Last month, we spent a fair bit of time talking about the fact that Apple TV Plus was doing very well in the UK, and that Apple seemed to be focusing heavily on this part of the world. And they had a whole bunch of nominations for the British Academy of Film and Television Awards, or the BAFTAs. And they succeeded in winning BAFTAs for Bad Sisters and The Essex Serpent.
Very good. Very good.
And just being sort of on the ground here, I won't call it the British Isles because my husband would kill me. He's quite a proud Irish nationalist, and these are not British Isles. I believe it's the Western Atlantic Archipelago, I'm supposed to say. But anyway, here close to, adjacent to Britain, and Bad Sisters is actually written by a very talented Irish lady, so I'm going to claim some ownership of that one. But there's a lot of very positive buzz about these shows. So Apple do seem to be getting some traction here. It's almost like happened about 5 years ago, where all of a sudden Netflix went from being something nerds knew about to something regular folk knew about. Because I remember going to coffee one day in work and everyone was talking about The Crown. And that was the day I realized that Netflix had gone mainstream, because that was the water cooler talk, not the nerd talk, the regular water cooler talk. And that's now happening with stuff like Bad Sisters. So good for Apple.
Yeah. Yeah, great.
One of my favorite Apple TV Plus shows is Ted Lasso, and I'm really enjoying having season 3 out. And it made me very happy that they gave Hannah Waddington the Christmas special for Apple TV Plus this year. She famously did her own singing in, I think it was season 2, because it turns out she's an extremely talented singer, as well as being a really talented actress, or actor, I think we're supposed to say. So, yay. I just made me very happy.
Great. That's great. Yeah, good. Good news.
Yeah. Apple Maps then is continuing to get TLC in Europe. I mean, I think most of America has the shiny new maps experience, and Ireland was very early on the list for once. So I've had shiny Apple Maps for about 2 years now, and they really are very pleasing. But now 6 more countries get to have the pleasure: Austria, Croatia, Czechia, Hungary, Poland, and Slovenia. So basically a good chunk of Eastern Europe there, which is great. And another service that is often very quiet for a long time, and then all of a sudden Apple seem to realize that they have this thing and they go nuts. And so 20 new games have just dropped on Apple Arcade, which is wow.
You know, Apple Arcade is interesting. I just will make this as a side comment. I am not a gamer. I never get around to having time for it. But from what I'm hearing from people who do use Apple Arcade, that it is delightful in that it doesn't constantly come up and ask for more money or for more. You have to, you know, so it seems like it's a better experience for mini gamers.
I'm firmly in the casual gaming camp. I will pull out a game when I'm stuck in a queue somewhere. Rather, it's not something I'll do proactively, but I will do often silly card games and things. But the great thing with Apple Arcade is because it's a subscription, there are no ads, there are no in-app purchases to buy Smurf berries or whatever the heck else is supposed to be there. There's none of this trying to extort money out of you at every turn because it's a subscription service. And it's just really pleasing to go, I'm in the mood for a card game. Let me have a look in Arcade. Ah, I'll play that. You download it, you play it, you get bored, you delete it, you download something else. It is very pleasing. And because of Apple One, for the whole family, I game maybe 10% of the gaming that gets done in this household, but my better half is way more into gaming. And so for him, the games part or the arcade part of our family Apple One plan is really good value for money. And he never reads like Apple News, and he doesn't care. He almost never uses any of his iCloud storage. I get to use all of that, which is fine by me. You know, so we each use different parts of it, and it actually works out quite well. But I really like having Apple Arcade. I see it as a bonus extra. I would have Apple One anyway, but this is like, as a free bonus, I get to have fun games with zero hassle.
Yeah, sounds good.
So I like it when I say 20 games. Now, the next story I've put in the show notes, because it got stuck in my head for 2.5 days because I read the headline, and I'm going to inflict it forward. So there is a company called Pinkfong who are very creative people who for making earworms. They made something you may have heard called Baby Shark. Well, they have an exclusive podcast on Apple Podcasts.
Okay. I've heard about this, but have stayed away from it. So.
Okay. Well, I'll put it this way. It is, if you have kids, it's impossible to stay away from Baby Shark, and it is utterly harmless and it's so adorable, but it is some sort of mental super glue. It goes in and it doesn't come out. And I actually listened to a podcast explaining that there's something about the chord progression that your brain never thinks it finishes. And therefore it doesn't stop going around in your head. I think a lot of families will be happy about that.
Okay.
And then the last one will make a lot of teenagers very, very happy. Apple Music Live is returning, and the first performer will be Ed Sheeran. So a free Ed Sheeran concert for Apple Music. That will make a lot of people happy.
That's a big deal. He really gets a lot of good press. That is an artist I know. I mean, not really well, but well. Yeah. So.
And he just won his big court case, thank goodness.
Yes, heard about that.
And I really liked his descriptions about how, you know, these chord progressions and stuff are the atoms with which everyone builds their music, and no one should be allowed to own them. I thought, very eloquent young man. I was very impressed.
Yeah.
Right. Well, we have four main stories to digest for this month. So just a quick preview of them for the listeners. We will be starting with Apple's new high-yield savings account. Then our second story will be not such happy news. Cyber criminals are distinctly shifting their focus towards the Mac. It's not time to set your hair on fire, but it is nonetheless a change. Our third main story then is back to the good news column. Apple and Google are working together to prevent trackers like AirTags from being used for stalking. And then our fourth main story is the reason that I went out of my way to invite you, because it was that earnings time of the year again. And the last couple of earnings calls have been very much as expected and not all that exciting. This one did not go the way Wall Street expected, and it wasn't for a bad reason. So I'm really happy to have you here to explain it all to us, because there's lots of nuance in it, as best as silly old me can tell.
Mm. So, well, okay. I will comment when we get there.
Indeed. So, main story number one, Apple have launched their previously announced high-yield savings account in the United States of America. Now, actually, you can help me out immediately. I am familiar with a term called APR, which is annual percentage rate. What's an APY?
It's the same thing.
Oh. Well, that's not very exciting.
It's not. Yeah. It's as far as I know, it's the same thing. That's how I have interpreted it. Yeah, as far as I know, that's they're talking about exactly the same thing. Now I also thought of it as APR though, so that makes me wonder if I have missed something. But I've heard no discussion about it being anything other than what
you understand it to be. Yeah,
so I would imagine somebody would have hollered if it was something different. It's something I have not had a chance to get around to it, but I'm curious about it because, like many people, I have a checking account that has a certain amount of money, and I do have interest bearing, but the interest rate is much lower than this. And like, hey, you know, take a look and see if it makes much of a difference. I have heard some commentary that people have said they looked at the amount of money and went, oh, that's not very much, but you know, if you're not familiar with the rate, you have to put a lot in to get a lot back on a rate.
Right? Oh, I mean, so, what do they expect? Like, you know, it's 4.15%. I'm going to say APR because that's how my brain works.
Yeah.
Which is, that's pretty decent. Like, my checking account is not within a million miles of that. My mortgage is closer to that, but not my checking account. and on the mortgage, it's less of a positive thing. The other thing that's kind of nice is there's no minimum balance. So like a lot of savings accounts, you have to have X amount of money to be allowed to open the account, and then you have to lock it up for X amount of time. But there's none of that. There's no minimum. You can move the money in, you can move the money out. There's no fees. And it's backed by Goldman Sachs. So it's covered by the FDIC, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation.
Correct. Yeah. Whew. And it's up to $250,000, but I don't think they let you put that much in to this. I think
might be a maximum balance. Yeah, there's no minimum, but that doesn't mean there's no maximum. Yeah.
Correct. And we've had some banking issues in this country recently, which you may or may not have heard about.
No, I did.
Some of that had to do with people having more than that FDIC limit. Yeah. So, I think one of the articles basically show your third link here basically shows there are some other banks that offer even more, but they're not names that I was familiar with. And I do follow finance fairly closely. So, you know, I would go, and especially since banks have had problems lately.
Right. Yeah.
This to me sounds like a very attractive offer.
There's also the sheer ease of use, right? a savings account that's difficult to get your money in and out of is going to be one you don't really use very much.
Exactly.
You know, and this, because actually, yeah, if you're an Apple Card customer, this becomes even easier because you get X amount, X percent of cash back on transactions, and it varies depending on who the transaction is with. You get extra cash back if it's with Apple and so forth. But you can take all of that cash back and have it go straight into the savings account, which means it immediately starts accruing the 4.15%. And I'm trying to remember, I'm going by memory here, which is a bad idea, but fingers crossed. It is definitely compounded daily, and I believe they pay the compound interest weekly. Am I right on that? Because the compounding, it is compounded daily, but they don't pay you every day.
I don't recall. I know that on my checking account, which, as I said, does pay interest, it's compounded monthly, it's payable monthly. So I'm not sure about this one. I don't recall it one way or the other, but it's an easy thing to look up. So,
I definitely remember them saying that they were compounding it daily. So it actually will grow quite nicely.
Yeah. Yeah. So, one more comment there. I mean, a person, and I don't know how things work, you know, in Ireland or EU or UK or anything like that, but here people offer, banks will offer a certificate of deposit. And that often has an attractive interest rate to it, but you have to leave the money in for a certain term and not pull it out. So, for instance, if it's a six-month CD or a one-year or a five-year, whatever, and the interest rate goes up with the amount of time you're willing to leave it. And these interest rates are attractive enough. They're attractive and as attractive as some of the other CDs that are offered.
I don't think we call them CDs, but we definitely have exactly what you're describing. I think we call them medium-term savings accounts. Your money isn't locked away for years, but it is usually locked away for a minimum of six. Where you have to give at least 6 months' notice or whatever. And then I think there's some of them where you can lock it away for 5 years, and then you get like really shiny interest rates. But you need to be darn sure that
you're not going to need the money. Right?
Yeah, which is kind of difficult, yeah. Right? There will be no emergency. Nothing unexpected will happen, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, if a person is interested in that, then they have to find out what are the terms if they do have to withdraw it, because usually there are terms, but you don't get the full interest rate from bank to bank and so on and so forth. So it's not like you've locked it away and you've lost it forever.
The penalties can be quite steep, though, particularly if you end up having to break it particularly early. You could end up, I believe it's conceivable, like if you've locked it up for 5 years and you take it out after 1, you might even lose a bit.
Okay. I don't know if you would lose the principal on most of them here. You might lose some of the interest. But again, it's going to vary from institution to institution and from CD to CD and from, you know, like 2021 to 2025 or, you know, whatever year. So it varies. So people have to check the specifics.
Yeah. Last month, Apple had just launched their Pay Later service. And myself and Alison were saying how we felt a bit icked out that Apple was getting into the business of helping people rack up debt. And then I think this broke 2 days after we recorded the last show. And this has the exact opposite feeling to me. This is really encouraging a very healthy financial behavior. Mm-hmm. So I really like Apple being in this market, you know, low friction saving. That just sounds good.
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
And of course, I'm sure Apple would like you to use your savings to purchase Apple products, but hey.
Always, but yeah.
I think my biggest takeaway as a European is I'm jealous and I would like this, please.
I imagine you'll get it eventually. Hopefully it won't be one of those things that takes forever to get to Ireland.
I'm hoping the European Union has my back because we have unified banking regulations. So if you're a bank anywhere in Europe, you can do business everywhere in Europe.
Okay, that makes sense.
So I'm hopeful that the whole lot of us will get this kind of joyful product together, all as one. Because of the Apple Card, I also want, because of the convenience of, well, it's good security, it's well integrated with the Apple products, it has good money back on particularly Apple purchases, which I may make from time to time. So I would love to have the Apple Card with all of its convenience and its decent enough interest rate. Not that I ever carry a balance on my cards because my overdraft has a lower interest rate than my credit card, so I know where my balance gets carried, and it's not my credit card.
Yeah.
But I, you know, this kind of thing I would just love because it's so easy. You just put the money in and it gets bigger. Yay. Okay, so moving on to main story number two. Not a good news story, but again, just to stress, the sky isn't falling. This isn't a catastrophe, but it's really noticeable when you zoom out, which is kind of the joy of recording this show, is that I get to zoom out and look at a whole month's worth of news and look for patterns. And individually, these are three meh stories, but they're all pointing in the same direction. They're pointing in the direction that the people who do cybercrime for profit have noticed that the Mac is a community of people of whom they can make a profit. So the first story that broke was that Patrick Wardle, who is an extremely accomplished cybersecurity researcher with a heavy Apple focus, he discovered a ransomware variant in the wild that was compiled for the M-series Macs. Now, he analyzed it and recognized it as a Mac version of an existing Windows ransomware. And he sort of described it as a crude early beta. It wasn't particularly reliable. It was obvious that they were experimenting with it and hadn't quite figured it all out yet. So it actually crashed, which meant it didn't do very much harm because it crashed. But it does show that the same ransomware gangs that are going after Windows so successfully are working on Mac versions. Mm-hmm. So again, this is not immediate danger right now, but the days of complacency, I mean, they should have been over quite some time ago, but they really, really, really should be over now. And so definitely for now, the most important thing everyone can do is to patch. When Apple release an update, apply it. And in fact, a related story is that that's gotten a little bit easier because Apple have issued their first rapid security response, which was a new feature they told us about last summer and haven't really used for real. They did a few tests of it since January, and this week we all got our first real one. And they're teeny tiny small little sort of laser-focused security updates that just, instead of it being a giant big update that fixes 20 million things, they're just little small fixes that do one thing and just fix it. So when you see them, do them, is definitely the advice. So that was the first bit of news, and that wouldn't have made this podcast. You know, I would have talked about it on Security Bits on the Nosillacast, but I wouldn't have made it a story here. And then, I think about a week later, the second story broke. A different group of security researchers who keep an eye on the cybercrime underworld because, so you're probably aware that there's a big trend in legitimate software to go for software as a service. And if you're in industry, you may be familiar with concepts like platform as a service or infrastructure as a service, where you basically, you get other people to worry about different layers of the stack and then you build your stuff on top of that. Well, there is, unfortunately, crime as a service. There are all sorts of malware as a service. And there was one discovered called, well, it was named AMOS, which stands for Atomic macOS Stealer. And it was for sale on a secret Telegram channel. And basically, it is a piece of malware for the Mac that tricks you into handing over your admin password and then hoovers up all of the passwords in your keychain, waits for you to try use some cryptocurrency, then hoovers up all of your cryptocurrency and has a wee scan around for sensitive data in your files and exfiltrates those while it's at it. You don't want to catch it. But now, it is a Trojan. It relies on tricking the user. But again, there are cyber criminals selling Apple malware. So, you know.
Are all of these reliant on, that's maybe a dumb question, but maybe not so much. They're reliant on unpatched flaws? Or is this going to be one, is there's going to be 0 days, right?
Well, at the moment, it's not just that they're reliant, it's not just that patching will protect you. It's actually, they're actually even weaker malware than that at the moment. So at the moment, they're all Trojans, which means they rely on tricking the squishy organic bit, as I like to say. So at the moment, they rely on tricking you to install them and to click OK when the Mac tries to tell you this is a terrible idea. They'll try to social engineer you into clicking past the warnings, because the Mac will warn you.
Okay.
The next logical step is that you start to exploit known vulnerabilities, which is a lower bar, because as soon as Apple release a patch, the baddies reverse engineer the patch, and then it's easy to attack unpatched systems. So that's sort of phase two. And then phase three, when all that low-hanging fruit has been harvested, phase three is the 0 days and stuff. And at that point in time, well, we're a long way away from that, but at that point in time, then you are thinking, is it time to start installing antivirus on my Mac? But don't, that's not a conversation for today.
Right.
The point today is to be aware that right now there are people trying to make money by tricking Mac users.
Right.
So for now, don't be tricked. Do patch your stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
Which is, I say, easy. Everyone falls for it. I like to tell a story about how our senior sysadmin in work let out a string of expletives in the office last year. I'm like, what's happened? And he just said, I've been phished. Now, he noticed it 30 seconds after it happened, and so he was able to completely limit the damage.
Right.
But this is an absolute expert with a lifetime of experience, and the only thing that experience bought him was the ability to recognise he'd been caught afterwards.
Right.
So don't feel bad, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll get off my horse.
That's good. Good horse. Good horse.
Well, that's already two pieces of news. And at this stage, it was probably going to make this show, but it didn't stop. Another security group discovered more malware. This one is called Rust Bucket, and this is a subtly different flavor again. So these first two stories were cyber criminals, so the motivation is profit. This third story is a so-called Advanced Persistent Threat, or APT, and that's government activity. Now, most of the time, government activity is about espionage, but actually there's one government in this world who do it for profit because they're sanctioned within an inch of their existence, and that would be North Korea. And their cybercrime group are known as the Lazarus Group. And they famously briefly got away with $1 billion from the Bank of Malaysia. Now, they lost most of it afterwards, but there's still, I think, 200 grand missing. So, you know, steal $1 billion, get a few hundred million. Is that a problem? You know, have you done so badly? Hard to tell. Anyway, an APT called Blue Norov, who everyone thinks are the Lazarus Group, who everyone thinks are the North Korean government, have been working on a new Mac-focused malware called Rustbucket that they are using apparently for espionage. So that, again, is in the wild. Now, that's not likely to focus on regular human beings, but nonetheless, people we'd rather not have focusing on the Mac are focusing on the Mac.
Interesting.
And then just, because I couldn't really think of anyone else to hang it in the show notes, but I think it is worth mentioning that the NSO group and Pegasus have not gone away. Citizens Lab gave us a little update to let us know that the product still exists, it is still being used to spy on journalists and things, and as of 2022, they were briefly able to make use of 3 zero-click exploits for their very high-value target. So this is your high-end, top-shelf, multi-million-dollar 0 days. And they are used judiciously, because as soon as Apple discover that they exist, they will be patched. So this is the kind of high level stuff that is used carefully by powerful people with very, very, very big wallets. But nonetheless, they're going after Apple stuff. Now, an interesting little side note on this one is that Apple's lockdown mode, which they make available as an optional high security, but with a lot of inconvenience for people who know they're a target, that was successful in these cases. So that is interesting.
So that did protect the people that were under attack.
It did. It resulted in, excellent, instead of it being zero click, it resulted in it popping up a warning that they would have then had to accept, which is a, you know, from zero click to anything more than zero click is a big loss for the attacker.
Right.
Because stealth is the big thing. And just in case you think the NSO group are somehow unique, There is also another similar product that was recently discussed in the news called Rain, which is also by an Israeli grey hat company. I don't know what it is about Israeli companies selling spyware, but they seem to like doing it.
Now, Pegasus, I thought Pegasus had been somehow curtailed by the Israeli government or the U.S. government or both. I thought they were going to be able to put them out of business. That's not the case, evidently.
Not fully. I believe there was a lot of reorganization. There was a lot of slimming down of the company. There was a lot of rejiggering of stuff, but they didn't go away. Okay. And it's very much, if you have a paintbrush where the handle and the head have all been replaced, is it still the same paintbrush? Because Pegasus is constantly and continuously being updated with new 0 days, and then Apple patched them, and then the NSO group finds something new. So yes, it has the same brand name, but no, it isn't the same malware.
Okay. I thought at the company level, though, that it had been...
They had their wings clipped. They had their wings clipped, and the Israeli government made a big song and dance about saying they would put more tight regulation and that they would stop them selling to authoritarian regimes.
I see.
But how much of that was genuinely meant and how much of that was actually implemented? And whose definition of authoritarian?
Well, and if you say, okay, I won't sell to an authoritarian government, then you sell to somebody else who sells to the government. I mean, you know, there's lots of ways around that. So, okay. All right.
Yeah. So, yes, they definitely got a bit of a slap on the wrist for being caught. I think they got in trouble for being caught more than anything else. And the Israeli government did some PR.
Okay.
But, yeah.
The U.S. government did something, but I don't remember what it was. Maybe sanctions. Okay. All right. Yeah.
So they can't sell to the US. But that still leaves quite a significant portion of the planet.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they still exist, unfortunately. And speaking of still existing, Joanna Stern and Nicole Nguyen, I believe is how Alison said I pronounce it, who were for the Wall Street Journal, they did some sterling reporting recently about quite how bad it is to both lose your iPhone's passcode and your iPhone at the same time, because it allows people to reset your iCloud. And we already knew that, but Joanna and Nicole found a new and even more evil thing you can do. You can lock someone out of their iCloud forever by setting up a recovery key, because then the only people who can recover the account are the thieves. So if you have a terribly weak iPhone passcode, might be time to do something about that.
Yeah.
And when you're entering it, make sure you're not being watched. Sort of enter it like you do an ATM machine, if you can remember those.
Yeah.
Right. With all that bad news, like I say, be vigilant. That is the only thing I want people to take away, is be vigilant.
Right.
Let us move on to main story number 3, which is firmly in the good news column. We have talked a lot on this show over the past many months, since the AirTag came out, about the double-edged sword nature of the AirTag. I adore my AirTags. I literally have a dozen of them. They have saved my bacon on quite a few occasions. I have not lost an umbrella since. I have not permanently lost an umbrella since. And there's been a few occasions where I have left somewhere and my phone has gone, you have left without your X. And I've gone, oh, sugar. So I have. And I've turned around and I've gone back and I've picked up whatever it was. I have found my keys that had slipped between the couch cushions and were very hard to find. And I found something under the bed once as well. Might have been my wallet. But basically they work, and they work really well. Yeah. But there's always been the danger of, what if I put my AirTag on someone else? Now, Apple have from day one designed in safeguards where they will make a noise, but people sell AirTags with the speaker bust. So they buy AirTags, they smash the speaker, and then they sell them for more money, even though they're broken, because now they're stealth AirTags.
Right.
And the defense against that has been that an iPhone will detect a rogue AirTag and tell you you're being followed. But that was an Apple-only thing. Now, you could install an Apple app on your Android phone, but then you'd have to run the app to proactively scan for the AirTags. And everyone always kind of said that the only way to do this properly would be to have some sort of a unified standard that all the phone operating systems could use. I am delighted to say Apple and Google have sent such a standard to the Internet Engineering Task Force for certification, so it has now entered the comment period, which is usually 3 months. So basically, Apple and Google have drafted the standard, they've sent it to the IETF, it is now in public comment phase for 3 months, then they will act on the comments, and they hope to have a final standard approved by the end of the year, which means that all the makers of these trackers and all the makers of phones will all be interoperable in terms of not being stalked. And that is just a win. So.
Yeah.
And the other story that I sort of felt we should talk about, it's not a great fit, but it does kind of show the problem, not the problem, inherent conflict. So Apple have never, ever described the AirTag as being an anti-theft device. They have always described it as being an anti-loss device. It is for finding lost things. And that is because anti-theft and stalking are the same thing. Mm. Silently tracking something so that the person who has it doesn't know they're being tracked. That's what a theft tracker is, and that's what stalking is. And that's why AirTags have actually proved to be really bad at stalking. Because why are there so many people getting caught stalking with AirTags? It's not because no one was stalking before. And it's not because people weren't using silent trackers that were basically based off GPS. Right. It's that the AirTag is really good at snitching on itself. And so the reason there were lots of people getting caught was because the AirTags are really good at snitching on themselves. So it's kind of a surprise to me that New York City have decided to hand out 500 free AirTags to try to prevent car theft. Because those AirTags are going to try to make themselves known to the car thieves. So I don't know, it seems wrong-headed to me. Like, you know, a LoJack or something is designed for that. It's built into the car. Can't slip a car into someone's, you know, backpack or whatever to track them stealthily. So it seems like an odd choice to me. But it made a lot of news that AirTag now officially supported by the NYPD. Yeah, but
Yeah, I don't have an answer. I know that the NYPD is has one of the best reputations in the U.S. So unlike some other cities that I won't name that don't have very good reputations, NYPD has a pretty good reputation, partially as a result of 9/11, actually. They really work hard to try to keep those folks safe. So,
yeah.
Yeah. All right. But I don't know the details on this particular thing.
It's just an interesting because it sets up the conflict, right? Because they're not particularly good theft trackers. But then again, they're $29 each. So they're a lot cheaper than anything else they could do. And they do work for a couple of hours as a tracking device. So maybe if you notice your car's gone quickly enough. And on the other hand, NYPD were very clever about this because the first thing they said was the way this will work is that you will give us your phone. So we won't be able to stalk you. You will give us your phone when your car is stolen, and under no circumstances are you to go after the criminal yourself, which is the other very important point, because we literally had someone get shot recently because they had an AirTag in their car and they got tired of waiting for the police. They called the police. The police said, "We're on the way. Don't do anything." And they went and did something and got shot. Don't do that.
Yeah, not good. That was in Ireland or that's here?
No, I'm sorry. No, I'm afraid to say we have gun regulation. If that was here, it would be headline news. Whereas I'm afraid to say in America, it was a one-liner that I heard on one podcast. Yeah. I believe it was in Texas.
No comment. Okay. Yeah. I will say this. We had an AirTag in a piece of luggage and it evidently fell out into a cruise ship. And for the longest time, we had the luggage. Luggage is fine. But for the longest time, we could track this cruise ship where it was going around the world. I think the battery finally went out on it. But for 2 or 3 years, I mean, I assume it was going ding, 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 and nobody noticed. Or, I don't, you know, who knows?
Well, down on the luggage hold, like on a moving ship. Yeah.
But it wouldn't have been. I would have thought that it would have been in the room because we wouldn't have had the luggage open. I mean, the luggage wouldn't have been open, I would think, and took for it to fall out. So I don't know. I don't know. Maybe somebody picked it up as they were cleaning and put it someplace else. But it would, we'd go, oh, the sure. ship is in the Philippines. Oh, the ship is, you know, gone to Bermuda. Oh.
That's cool.
All these places. So it is. Yeah, one can track these things.
Yeah, that's actually kind of impressive because that shows that the whole crowdsourcing thing works. Because remember that the AirTag has no GPS; it's depending on nearby iPhones. But obviously, on a cruise ship, there's enough passengers with iPhones that it's just fine.
Yeah.
There you go.
I'm gonna take a quick look as we can continue on.
Can you still find the cruise ship?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that it's gone.
The batteries last about one to 2 years is what I'm discovering, depending on quite, how often you make
quite
it.
Quite some time ago. Yeah, no, it's gone now. Everything that's here is current.
Current. Well, that's important.
Yeah. So.
Right. Well, I'm going to move us into our fourth and final story. Apple's Q2 2023 earnings call, and Apple do their calendar funny. So, do you want to sort of set the scene on this one? Because I think you're better than me.
I've just watched financial stuff for longer than you have. You're just like, you've watched security stuff a lot longer and know a great deal more detail than I do. The quarter, the short story is that the quarter was much better than expected. I'm going to say much better, maybe certainly better than expected. Currently, let me say a couple words. Currently, on our planet, the macroeconomic conditions, as they say, what that means is how people are feeling generally and whether or not they want to spend money on anything, let alone Apple products. Currently, the environment is not good. Part of the reason for that has to do with the Ukraine war. That doesn't make people in the EU particularly happy and cheery and willing to go out and spend their money. They're having to spend more money on energy, you know, gas that they used to get from Russia, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Inflation rates are high in the UK. Inflation rates are high in the EU. And the EU and the US are big economic forces. China was locked down for a long time because of COVID. So all of the stuff going on economically in our very complex world makes people, you know, either happy to go out and buy new Apple things and feeling like they're flush with cash and they can afford it, or not so much. And in the world, it has been not so much for the past, well, if you want to include the whole COVID thing, several years. Now, Apple and a lot of other companies did quite well during COVID because people were locked up in their homes and they wanted to play games. They wanted to do their work, you know, if they could hook up and do their work through Zoom, et cetera, et cetera. So then the sales of Macs and iPhones and all of Apple's products jumped, and also games, because people are bored. They can't go out and watch movies. They can't go to a movie theater. They can't, I mean, you know, et cetera, can't go out with their buddies. So that is the most important
fact
about what has been going on. That's just the way it is. Then Apple will talk about having tough compares, meaning if people have gone out and spent a lot of money on these Macs and iPads and iPhones because they need them because of COVID, and then we compare the same quarter a year later and Apple doesn't sell so many of these items, then it looks bad because generally the market wants Apple's numbers to go up higher and higher every year, although they do compare quarter to quarter. So when this is Q2. So they consider the Christmas quarter. I'm going to say the Christmas quarter, but December. That's Q1. This is Q2. So that's the big story. However, on this particular quarter, with iPhone specifically, it did very, very well, better than expected. And the big theme in the conference call itself was that was due to emerging markets. And by emerging markets specifically, they were talking about India and Saudi Arabia. I don't know why Saudi Arabia is an emerging market, but that's evidently they held it under that rubric. And numerous other, Indonesia, Malaysia, Mexico, all those countries were named. So the iPhone is gaining share, apparently, in those markets. It also did pretty well in China, perhaps because China is coming out of their COVID lockup. Also, Apple seems to be gaining some share. So the iPhone itself did really, really well. So now I've given you a whole lot of information. Do you want to jump in?
Okay, so the markets were expecting it to be terrible, terrible.
I wouldn't say terrible, terrible. They weren't expecting it to be as good as it was.
Okay, and so if I'm remembering right, the iPhone dropped 3% year over year. But given it had gone up a lot the previous year, that 3% drop means that they didn't even go 2 years back in time. They went sort of 1.5 years back in time in terms of absolute numbers.
Yeah, that sounds right. I'd have to pull up the charts to because I don't know.
Six colors. I went by six colors, but basically they were predicting they would go back 2 years worth of Q2s, and they didn't. They landed between the 2022 and 2021 quarters.
Yeah, that sounds right. And 2021, if I remember, was especially good.
Yeah. I believe it was 53% growth.
Yeah. So when you've got that's a tough compare. Specific example of a tough compare. That's it. So the iPhone did well. Now the Mac and the iPad did not do that well. But I think, I mean, we can get into all.
I wouldn't stress over the Mac and the iPad, because you can correct me if I go off the rails here. But my interpretation would be that an iPhone has a shorter life, right? There are lots of people who change their iPhone every year. Some people change it every 2 years. A Mac, very few people change it every year. Not that many people change it every 2 years or even every 3 years. People tend to go with their Macs for 4 or 5 years. So if Apple sold loads of Macs during COVID, and they sold loads of iPads during COVID, then the expectation I would have had is that this would have been a bad quarter for Macs.
Yeah, I think there's several things. There was also the fact that they had come out with, I believe in the year ago quarter, the M1 Macs. And I don't remember specifically which models, if it was the M1 Max and the, you know, the, but, or M1 Ultra, but et cetera. Those Macs did very, very well. And again, economically speaking, people had more money at that time. Now I'm going to take the US and the EU. Citizens were given money to help cover over the the government said, here's some money so you can still eat because COVID is here and we've got a problem. So people had more money at that point in time, and they bought Macs because if they work for a company, the company may have bought the machine for them. So there was a lot of money flowing around to do those kinds of things. Now we have high inflation. We do not have a lot of money rolling around the planet at this point in time. So all of those are factors. It's multiple things, and depending on what models they've introduced. I mean, things went really well. The financial markets, at least, are not particularly worried about any particular item. They're not going, oh, it's terrible, your Mac sales went down. As a matter of fact, the market, the stock went up, I think, nearly 4% the next day, which is considerable. That's a good size jump for Apple.
It's not like their stock is cheap. So 4% cheap is...
The stock is not really expensive, even though you may look at the per share price, but when you put in all the appropriate factors, I'm not going to go into the detail on that unless you want it. But when you put in the appropriate factors, the stock is actually not that expensive. So a person can buy, with a certain amount of money, instead of buying 8 shares of a $5 stock, you can buy 2 shares or however the math works out, 2 shares or 1 share of Apple, and you're going to be better off.
I guess. And they did do a stock split a few years ago because the stock was getting too expensive per individual share.
Per share, yeah. And they do that every so often. They've done it actually numerous times in the years I've been watching the stock. It's split numerous times, which is good. it makes it easier for individual investors, smaller investors, to invest in the stock.
Now, the fact that the iPhone was good offsets a lot, because if you look at a pie chart of Apple's money, it's not exactly half iPhone. I think it was 53% or something, but it's approximately half iPhone, approximately a quarter all the other hardware, and approximately a quarter services, which is sort of a nice breakdown. So between the wearables, the iPad and the Mac, you get about a quarter, a little bit more than a quarter. And then the services are 22%. I'm going to call that a quarter as well. So, you know, and the services did well. The iPhone did well. So that means that three quarters of the pie chart did well. So, yeah, so what if there's a bit of a drop on the other three little pieces of the pie, you know? And like I said, they're not worrying drops. They're expected drops. So that doesn't make the markets cranky.
Yeah, the other part is that the top line and bottom line earnings, both your total amount of revenue for the quarter and also the earnings per share, both of those numbers were higher than much of the market expected. And it's always against expectations. It's always against expectations. I think they, this is off the top of my head, and I don't remember, but they were expecting roughly $90 billion, and they got like $94 billion, roughly.
Yeah, I think somewhere between 93 point something, so we call it 93.
Yeah, 93 point something. So, but it was, the point is that it was higher.
Yeah.
So that's it. The other thing that's happening is that Apple is doing comparatively well than many other companies in this environment. And listening to the earnings call, they talk about macroeconomic conditions. That's what I just gave you a description of, right?
But headwinds, I love saying headwinds, right? Macroeconomic headwinds.
Right. Yeah. And so those are things that make us human beings on this planet not eager to go out, and they go, maybe I can make this older iPhone or this older Mac or this older iPad last a little bit longer. Services, if you go, well, you know, I can spend $5 on a game, or I can spend, you know, I can subscribe to something and it's only $2 a month, right? So it's a different experience. So that's the bottom line of what's going on.
Cool.
So
some other stuff that caught my eye is Tim Cook was asking the questions about layoffs, and he said that was not on the cards and that would be a last resort. I think that comes down to the fact that Apple didn't go nuts hiring people at the same rate as everyone else did. So if you don't go nuts hiring people when times are good, you don't have a problem when times are less good.
Correct. And I heard, I listened to various podcasts on financial news. I heard one commentator say, he specifically said, they were like, look, there's all these layoffs at Google and all these layoffs at Facebook and all these layoffs. And the moderator came back and said, well, but they haven't been there at Apple yet. And this guy goes, they'll be there at Apple. And I sat there and I went, I don't think you know what you're talking about, dude. So occasionally you get, that happens. Yeah.
So. Something else that I notice is that they still didn't give guidance. And I'm assuming the excuse is that the world is a topsy-turvy place, therefore we won't give guidance. And is there a legal requirement that they someday give guidance again?
No, there is no legal requirement. It depends on the overall financial environment. If Google and Facebook and Amazon and all these other companies start giving guidance, then people might say, come on, Apple, everybody else is giving real guidance. You should too. Apple can, because Apple is so big, kind of thumb their nose at that, but they might not. They might not. Let me say just a couple more things on general overall trends. Either the last conference call or the one before that, Luca and Tim, to my ears, sounded more scared than I've ever heard them sound.
Wow.
And I think that had to do with what was coming in terms of inflation and the Ukraine war and a lot of this unknown. This time, they did not sound like that. They sounded more normal again, but they also were not as forthcoming with the analysts' questions. There's a couple times they actually did answer the questions, but in past calls, I've heard them offer more color around any particular topic. I mean, they just offer more of a context, and it helps the analysts figure out where to go. This time, there was a higher percentage of answering but not answering the question.
Right.
And they could have. I mean, these weren't particularly stupid questions. I mean, sometimes they are stupid, but they did not sound that way to my ears this time.
Right.
So that's Linda's take.
No, it's interesting. Because you've been on so many of these calls, you know what's normal. And yeah, that's interesting. So yeah. But they were definitely less apprehensive. They're not back to normal, but they were less apprehensive.
Yeah, I wouldn't say they were apprehensive at all on this call, but they did seem to be, and I should go back and listen and see what gave me that impression and which call for sure. But it was either the last one or the one before. I think it was actually the one before, because the last one they did pretty well on, as I now think about it.
Yeah, the holidays went all right for them. I mean, they weren't their best ever holiday quarter, but it was still a decent quarter. Yeah,
still decent. Right. Correct. So, yeah, so that's, I mean, that's, but my ears kind of perked up at that one call, and I thought, oh, that's really interesting for me to pay attention to, because Apple is such a large and influential company at this point that they really are often indicative of what's going on at a larger, at a higher logical level, to say it one way. Yeah. So,
another thing I'd like your opinion, or I'd like your view on, I guess. So I'm interpreting it as a sign of confidence by Apple that they're buying back $90 billion of their own shares. Is that a valid way to think about it?
I wouldn't think about it so much as confidence as Apple. You can think about it that way. They tend to do that because they have so much cash. They just have a ton of cash. And if they have that cash and they sit on it, they get a lot of pushback, flack. From the investors, because it's like, do something with that cash. Either put it into R&D and come up with new products, or make your business stronger, or buy another company, but do something with it. If they buy the stock back, that puts a floor under those shares. In other words, if they're buying stock, and someone told me recently, and I have not checked these numbers, but someone told me recently that cumulatively in the past, I don't know, however many years they've been buying back a lot of shares, they bought back almost a third of those shares.
Wow.
Now, that means that there's less shares out there. Now, I've not double checked those numbers, so somebody else can do that if they want to do it.
A substantial number of shares have been bought back, so each share has gone up in value.
Right. Exactly. So for that reason, it makes it clearer that if you, Bart, you decide to buy a certain number of shares, you're not going to lose your money, the chances of you losing it go down, because
it's
Apple
biased
is
in your favor.
Buying.
Interesting. Okay.
So
they did announce a dividend as well.
Correct. I've heard a few complaints about the teeny amount.
Well, they used to do no dividends, so any dividend is better than none.
The increase was 4%, if I remember correctly, and your rate of inflation
is more.
So it's not real good on the dividends.
Okay, so that's a good way to look at it, actually. Yeah, yeah, compared to inflation. Okay, so yeah, okay.
So not keeping up with inflation. So come on, Apple, you could be a little more generous, is the complaint I have heard.
Well, I'm going to end with one last question. So they didn't give guidance, but they did give color. So what are Apple telling us to expect for Q3?
They're basically saying steady as she goes. They say that this quarter is going to be much like the past quarter. And they... Let me see if I can remember One of the things they emphasized a lot was the emerging market sales in iPhones. So they're saying we're going to do okay. Remember, Apple is a very, very seasonal company.
Right.
So it's going to be okay, but don't expect stellar. There's also the foreign exchange headwinds. That environment seems better going forward. Ah. That's the prognostication.
Interesting. So, okay. I guess I'll just end with one final. These numbers are all, I won't say made up, but they're all guesstimates because Apple don't give actual numbers. But Counterpoint Research say that the Chinese smartphone market as a whole shrunk by 5%, but Apple's iPhone sales increased by 6% year over year. So that's an example of what you're talking about there, about those emerging markets. If the whole market is shrinking by 5% and Apple grows by 6%, that's even more impressive than a 6% growth.
Right. They're taking share. They're clearly taking share. Now, remember, looking back, that's going to include a lot of China's COVID lockdown. So
right, but that should have affected everyone, right? If Apple were just holding their own, then they would have gone down 5%.
Correct. Yes. It is so good. Yeah. But I'm just saying the reason for the shrinkage might not be the same going forward. So if they increase their market share, it could be really nice. We'll see.
Yeah, if they do really well in a growing market, that's even better than doing well in a shrinking market. Yeah, okay. Right. I see where you're going there. Yeah, interesting. Okay, that draws a line under our main stories. Just a few quick stories that also made the news to wrap us up. It was Earth Day in April, as it is every year, and Apple always do something. One of the big somethings is they release an annual report on where they stand on their environmental impact. So they have released a report. They released an extremely long press release singing their own praises about all the different ways that they're doing things to be environmentally responsible. And to be fair, as large corporations go, Apple they don't talk the talk, they walk the walk instead, which is, I think it's, you know, show me, don't tell me has sort of been my thing. And Apple really are, so that's kind of impressive. And then they also had a couple of press releases about some upcoming stuff. So they have a thing called the Restore Fund for, this is quite the euphemism, nature-based carbon removal or planting trees. It's the non-corporate speak version of that. But basically, they've increased their investment in planting trees. And they have also committed to 100% recycled cobalt by 2025. And that's actually a big deal because cobalt is very important in batteries. It is mined in countries that have some issues, shall we say, around labor, like slave child labor, that sort of thing. Some rather serious health and safety issues. So basically, not buying cobalt from that's what we called it when it was a Belgian colony. The Congo. Not buying cobalt from the Congo is probably better to not put money in warlords' hands. So this is a very good thing, both environmentally and geopolitically. So I was kind of happy to see that. In other news, the Steve Jobs Archive have released a free ebook called Making Something Wonderful, which features a curated collection of writings by Steve Jobs. And I believe there was physical books given to employees in Apple and Disney, and they are apparently available on eBay if you'd like to part with a lot of money. But the ebook is free, so you can enjoy the content without spending money. But if you want a physical book, open your wallet. Because they're not officially released. And of course, Steve Jobs' partner, very much so, was Johnny Ive. And he has been honoured with an Edison Achievement Award, primarily for his work with Apple. And let's face it, it was pretty impressive work.
Yeah.
So that was nice.
Let me make a comment going back to the environmental initiatives and all that they're doing. They focused on that in the opening statement in the conference call, which I thought was kind of interesting. I mean, Tim really pushed on that, on what they're doing, and also their diversity initiatives. And there's as you may know, there's some pushback against corporations who believe in such things as diversity and environmental initiatives in this country politically at this point, sadly. And I thought it was interesting that Tim was like, here is who we are. Here is what we do. And there was no effort at all. There was an effort to emphasize these facts about the company.
As opposed to hide it. Yeah. So that's the opposite. Yeah. That's interesting.
Or just be silent. I mean, they could have just been silent, but he was right there. Well, so I found that kind of interesting.
The only time I've seen Tim Cook come close to losing his temper was on an earnings call where someone asked him about the ROI on accessibility features. And
it was an annual meeting.
It was an annual shareholder.
Oh. It was an annual shareholders meeting. I remember that. Yeah. That guy was like, you don't like what we're doing? Sell your shares.
Yeah, we told you what we would do before you bought the shares. You bought the shares. This is what we do. And he didn't say F the ROI, but it was dark.
He said bloody. He said something like I bloody. He used the British. I mean, usually I think of the Brits as using, you know, I bloody will not do that.
Obviously, he's been spending too much time with Johnny Ive. But yeah, like it was a very strong word for a man like Tim Cook, who is normally extremely soft-spoken, very considered, very guarded. He was proper cranky.
Yeah. Yeah, he was. Yeah, it was interesting. Yeah, I remember that.
Which actually made me like Apple more. So,
me too. I mean, it's interesting what's going on in the world these days, I'm telling you. So anyway, back to the
back to the quick stories.
Yes, sorry.
Another thing we were promised was that our home pods would get a little bit cleverer and detect smoke alarms and send us notifications to our phones. Well, that feature is now real. So if you have a home pod and you allow it to update itself to the latest software, you can enable these alerts. So that is nice, particularly if you're traveling, so that you can feel comfortable that everything's fine at home. And there's a link in the show notes to how to turn it on, which is, I had to read that. In a normal month, this might have even been a full story because it made me cranky by proxy. GM have decided that CarPlay is something they want to get rid of so they can nickel and dime people on subscriptions to terrible, awful car interfaces. And Ford were very quick to say, we're not doing that. And when the Ford CEO was asked the question, the laugh they gave implied nothing more as, I can't believe GM scored such an own goal. I don't think I've ever seen the Ford CEO as gleeful about an announcement from GM as they were when they were asked that question. That was very interesting.
Very good.
And I have to say, I'm in the process of evaluating new cars. My plan is to buy a new EV next spring. And it is one of the things I have a spreadsheet. Of course, I have a spreadsheet. I have a spreadsheet of the different options and all of the things I care about. And that spreadsheet has a column for phone integration. And any car with CarPlay is getting a boost in my rating system. And all of the GM cars would just be off the list for me. Now, GM don't sell much here. And they're not making the world's best EVs, to be honest. Neither are Ford, frankly. The only EV they sell in Ireland is the Mach-E. And it's overpriced and underperforming. In Excel speak, it's not a good car. And it's also ugly. Like, I love a Mustang. Like, there's very few sports cars that get me, but gosh darn it, a nice Mustang. But the Mach-E is ugly. So probably, anyway, that's neither here nor there. The point is, GM have said no CarPlay, and I think it's a terrible idea. Ford have said, yes, we're sticking with CarPlay.
Okay. And I'm also in the market for an EV, so I'm going to talk to you offline about your spreadsheet.
I will. Now, my spreadsheet is very focused on me, as well as the CarPlay column. There's a column on what quality of the blue, because I only buy blue cars. I have a thing for the color blue, and I'm quite opinionated on my blue. And so I actually rank the different shades of blue available.
Interesting. Okay.
So anyway,
all right.
But no,
I'm interested in the CarPlay part, though. I really am.
The other thing is range and price. So basically what I want is a long range with CarPlay at a good price.
Yeah.
Ideally in a nice blue. But in that order.
Okay. All right. Sounds good.
Yes. Okay. Anyway, I will happily share. Finally, then, just to wrap us up, Microsoft have released their PhoneLink app, which gives you basic integration between your PC and your iPhone. As best as I can understand it, Microsoft are using the same APIs that Bluetooth uses to integrate with cars that don't have CarPlay. So Tesla famously don't have CarPlay, but I can still pair my phone to the car and it gives me basic messages integration so that the car can read my messages to me and stuff. So there exist APIs for this sort of real-time interaction. And as best as I can tell, the feature set in this app from Microsoft matches the feature set I see in cars. So I think they're using the same APIs.
Okay.
So effectively, okay, your laptop is a big car that doesn't go anywhere. but it's an interesting product, and it's getting a bit of buzz.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that is a month's worth of Apple news, neatly digested. I thank you very much for your help in doing so. Now, you are one of the people who are involved in running a most wonderful type of institution, the Mac User Group. So do you want to evangelize your mug? Or even tell people about it?
I want to say, well, svmug.org is the site. We also have a YouTube channel, and some of our presenters, recent presenters and et cetera, are up on YouTube if you want to take a look and see what kinds of things we do. It's a good group. It's been around a long time. And yeah, that would be it. And we can't get Bart on, sadly, because the time zone doesn't work for us. But one day. One day we will keep you up late.
I was going to say, if my annual leave overlaps, I did my first ever mug talk a few weeks ago to a mug in the UK. And I can honestly say it was one of the most fun evenings I've ever spent, because the selection effect, the people who come to mugs are the nicest people in the world. And yeah, it was such a fun audience. Honest to goodness, it was a mug in the UK and I had so much fun. Yeah. Anyway, so mugs. I think mugs are an amazing institution. So I'm delighted to hear that they're still a thing, because I know people keep predicting they'll go away, but they seem to thrive.
Well, yeah. There's more that could be said about that, but at the moment we're still here.
Well, good. So that's good. Long may it last. Yeah. So SV is Silicon Valley, I believe.
Correct. Silicon Valley Mac User Group. So svmug.org is us.
Excellent. Well, look, thank you again. Thank you very much for your time. You were very generous today on that short notice. And I'm just delighted you said yes. I love talking to you, and it's been a while.
It has been a long time, yeah. Okay. Thank you, Bart.
My pleasure. Listeners, if you would like to see the stories that informed my thinking on this month's Apple News, you will find them all at let's-talk.ie. There's quite a lot of them. My scroll bar is quite small. But it has been a whole month of news. While you're there, there is a big blue banner called Support the Show with big blue buttons. I really appreciate all of you who do so in any shape, size or form, whether that be spreading the word or more practical things like making a PayPal donation or signing up on Patreon. My intention with this show has always been that it break even and that I never need advertisers or sponsors so that I can be completely without conflict of interest. And I am delighted to say that the show approximately breaks even. A little more support would be nice, but it's approximately breaking even. There are no ads. There are no sponsors. This show is powered by you guys. I love you for it. I thank you for it. Please keep it up. I'd hate for it to go away. Anyway, bartb.ie is where you'll find me. I've been your host, Bart Bouchotz, and until next time, happy computing.
You're listening to another great podcast in the MyMac Podcasting Network.
Looking for a show that talks about Apple and Apple products? Then Geekiest Show Ever is for you.
What about Amazon? Google? Geekiest Show Ever is for you.
Mesh networks, distance learning, all kinds of technology, interviews? Yes, Geekiest Show Ever covers that too.
I'm Elisa Pacelli.
And I'm Melissa Davis. Listen to the Geekiest Show Ever on the MyMac Podcasting Network in your favorite podcast player.
Feedback, show ideas, and reviews, always welcome.